Al isn't here today, but I have a co-host, Janice Porter, and our guests are Representative Kirsten Engel and Representative Domingo de Grazia. So thank you for joining us. On Monday, the Arizona legislature starts. The Arizona legislature has seemed out of sync with the people of Arizona for a number of years. The Arizona citizens say education is a priority and funding it is a priority, and the legislature keeps going in a totally different way with tax cuts, giveaways that ensure that Arizona stays at the bottom of the barrel. So since funding decisions for schools are made primarily at the legislature, we decided to invite all the legislative candidates from LD10 to come on the show. So everyone will be invited, and they'll all be asked the same questions. So if there are questions you want to ask, just give us a call at 520-790-2040. So our first guest today is Representative Kirsten Engel, who was elected to the Arizona House of Representatives in 2016. She represents Legislative District 10. She is also a law professor at the University of Arizona. And I have a description of LD10.
Oh, great.
That you can...
Sure.
I say it goes from Campbell to Catalina Highway.
That's
right. It covers Speedway to Country Club in Midtown. But as you go further east, it goes from Foothills to Valencia.
That's correct.
Okay.
It's just north of the Air Force Base in the middle of the district.
Right. Okay. So it is kind of the core of the city and beyond, but all within Pima County.
That's right. It's really central and eastern Tucson.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you for going up there 4 days a week staying.
Thank you. it's important. It's an important position, and I'm very privileged to be able to serve in the legislature.
So these are the questions that we've asked everyone, and so the first one is, how should Arizona schools be funded?
Well, the first thing is that they should be funded. let's not get away from that. I think that we tend to get caught up in sometimes the how, and I think we need to make a clear commitment that we are going to fund our schools. We're still $1.2 billion a year below what we were funding our schools back before the recession. So there's still a great need there. And that's just the per student amount. We also have great needs in terms of infrastructure. We've got a lot of schools that have, you know, crumbling playgrounds and leaky roofs. You know, if you saw the pictures, it would really be quite a wake-up call. There's many ways of funding our schools. I happen to be an advocate of the Invest in Ed initiative that was run last year, in which we funded it on a more permanent basis through income taxes. I know that there is another initiative that's in the works that I think would be a combination of an increase in income taxes and also sales tax. The problem with sales tax is it's everybody knows it's frankly regressive. It gets the low income people. Obviously, we all have to fund education, but I think this is something where those that are better off have more ability to fund it. So an income tax, spread throughout all the tax brackets would probably be the best way to do it. We also have a fairly large amount of one-time funding this year, I think over $200 million. And I think this is a good way of us shoring up different parts of our education system. Those one-time funds can be used for fixing those crumbling school buildings. And I also have my own ideas on that, which I can talk about later.
Okay.
Well, I'd also
we are
like
on
to,
the edge of
okay,
our seat.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'd like to put that money into our financial aid trust fund so that we can make college affordable for students in this state. Across the board.
So is the $200 million one-time funding for the universities, one-time funding for everything from K to 16?
Well, these are basically the surplus revenues that we have to play with that are over and above what we're expected mm-hmm. in terms of our revenues. It's not just for universities. This is really for all different things that the state might appropriate.
Okay. So one of the things, and you mentioned this briefly in the I wanted to ask you about tax credits. Arizona gives away $13 billion in tax credits every year, and our entire state budget for 2019 was $11 billion.
That's right.
And another $300 million in tax cuts added last year?
Yes.
So...
Yes, and that was the great disappointment last year, in that we really had we had some good proposals for getting more revenue into the state, something called a wayfare, which this is the Supreme Court decision which enables states to tax online sales. Other states have done it. We finally did it last year. It's a source, I think, of $50 million this year. But we basically zeroed that out with a tax cut that we passed last year.
Is the tax cut you passed last year, will that continue to zero out the boost we got from the sales tax, online sales tax?
Well, I guess from the projections last year, basically, yes. I guess we don't know what will happen into the future, whether those online sales might speed up even more than was projected. But basically, it was, would zero it out.
So we're staying even.
Pretty much. I mean, that really left the only real sort of education budget item being the governor's 2020 plan, which increases teacher pay and threw more money into the schools, but at a fairly low amount.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Janice, do you have a question you want to ask?
I wanted to ask about something that's based on the third grade test that you're going to talk about.
Oh, okay. So I'll talk about that right now.
And I would just like to add Senator Mesnard, who was also behind the tax credit last year, he's announced that he's going to push for an additional tax cut this year of $300 million. So I don't know the particular details of that, but I think that's just going in the wrong direction.
Yes. So tests are considered high stakes. This is one of my final questions. Tests are considered high stakes when a single standardized test has a major impact, usually negative, on a child's schooling. Arizona has a school program called Move On When Reading. This uses a high stakes test given on a single day that determines whether a child will go into fourth grade or be required to be held back and kept in third grade. While we might think that this will benefit our students, research says it does just the opposite. So high school dropout rates actually increase when a child has been retained. Do you support the third grade high stakes test in reading?
No, I don't. This seems like a very bad idea to me. My understanding is that this is, you know, very, very traumatic to a student. And to base such a enormous thing as whether or not they continue with their friends and their peer groups into another grade on a single test offered one day, I think that's really a disservice to our kids. I think this is something where, rather than having a high stakes test, I think our teachers are excellent out there. They can identify those kids that are having problems and work with those kids to try to get them up to the level that they need to be at.
Okay. Thank you.
Robin and I have been involved at the classroom level for many years prior to No Child Left Behind, when this sort of standardized testing came in and kids were encouraged to be just study for the test and not to be critical thinkers. You have a bird's eye view of that couple of generations of students who are now at the university and even in law school. And are you finding that your students are not critical thinkers? Are they more willing to be, this is what I'm supposed to learn, this is all I'm supposed to learn, I'm not asking questions?
You know, I'm very privileged to be teaching law students. I'm also teaching some undergraduates in some classes as well. You know, I'm not sure I can really make a correlation on that level. You know, the biggest difference is technology and the ease of Googling answers. So to the extent that we're not necessarily getting those deeper critical discussions, I think that's because we're just chasing after information to add in. I support technology, but sometimes it can be a distraction from those kinds of critical discussions. I'm not sure I can make a connection with the testing.
Have you thought about what kinds of things, Robin set it up, but when you're thinking of third graders who are supposed to take a single test that says who they're going to be and what their path is going to be for the next 10 years, what are your feelings about that?
Kind of terror. I mean, just thinking of that kid sitting in that classroom, looking at the sheet of paper and just freezing up thinking about what's going to happen if they fail this test. So you don't necessarily, some kids, you know, excel on things like those tests. Some kids, it just, you know, shuts them down. And to have so much writing on a single test, that just doesn't make sense to me. I think it also really gives kids, kind of a wrong impression about what it is to read. You know, reading isn't based on a test. It's a skill that you have been learning since you first started in school, kindergarten or first grade. And it's something that increases as your comprehension and ability increases. So to put that for a single test, and to put them through that emotionally, have such a huge consequence for missing answers on that test, I just really question its accuracy and whether or not we're doing a service to the kids. I think we're probably harming them going through that experience, and we're not necessarily helping them to be good readers.
Thank you.
And writers, yeah.
So if people are interested in having more readers in third grade, there's a way to invest in that. Like reducing class size ensures that you will have more children, especially kids who are not English speakers and who come from low-income families. More of them will be reading by third grade, and it narrows the achievement gap. But we're not doing that. We're not doing the investment part of helping the kids become mm-hmm. better readers. We're just doing the penalization.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
That this is reading isn't it's not, you know, how many things you get right or wrong. And it just seems to be a fundamental misunderstanding of reading, and also a misunderstanding of the role of the school in terms of helping kids of very different abilities. As you mentioned, the issue that many kids are not coming from speaking English at home, that it just would be a bigger burden for them taking mm-hmm. this test.
Right. And yes, I'll drop that down. So this coming session, what are your priorities? What issues do you want to pursue?
Well, I have a lot of issues, not just education, but also criminal justice reform and mm-hmm. the environment. But on education, to get back to what I mentioned earlier, I've been very concerned about the increasing cost of college education. And we have really neglected our financial aid trust fund that we have in this state and could really be a benefit to students, need-based financial aid. And I think that we have an opportunity with these revenues that we have, one-time revenues that we can use, to really make a substantial investment so that we can make good on the constitutional guarantee. I don't know how many of the listeners out there know that in the Arizona Constitution, it says that secondary education should be as free as possible. I'm proposing to put $85 million into the financial aid trust fund. And that would mean, I think, something like every year. So that means 75% has to be distributed on a need basis to residents, Arizona residents, of that money. So I think that would really, I think, help make college affordable, which is what we need to do. This is not only important for students' personal development, but also we also know that the jobs of the future are ones that are going to require a college education. So I think we have an obligation to make that possible. Also, on the criminal justice front, you know, that intersects with education on in many different ways. One of the things that we're looking at right now is there's been a lot of discussion about earned release credits for prisoners. Mm-hmm. And these are things that are earned for basically good behavior when you're a prisoner. We do have the fourth highest incarceration rate in the United States. Far more people going into our prisons. It's a tenth of our budget. But one way that you can reduce your prison sentence right now is through earning these earned release credits. And yet, we have a requirement that you cannot earn these and use them to get out earlier unless you pass a literacy test in prison. I think this disproportionately impacts prisoners who are coming from who are Hispanic, Latino, or coming from different language background. And I guess with all due respect, I don't think a prison is where the best place to learn how to read. I think we can help. We do have an obligation. I think we should be helping those prisoners on the outside to become literate if they're not. But to make that a condition of staying in prison just makes no sense to me.
Right, because, I mean, economics has a huge bearing on how literate you are. And
that's right.
If you're in prison, I mean, that would be the place I would think.
That might contribute to them being in prison.
Right, right. Because they probably can't get a job if they're not literate. Right. But you'd think that that would be a great place to put in literacy programs.
Right, and I think there are some literacy programs in the prisons, but what we have been finding is that, you know, prison programming is not nearly what the demand is for these types of programs.
Right, and doing it in prison is kind of late to the game. It would be better if we started earlier, like in K-3, and then we would reduce the illiterate population.
That's right. That's right.
Would you talk a little about how prison reform would, criminal justice reform would have to do with felons being able to get the vote, to have their vote returned to them? Robin and I were talking before the show about the number of people we talk to now, if we're canvassing or talking to prospective voters, who just say to us, I can't vote, I'm a felon.
That's absolutely, I've had exactly the same experience, and it really is a wake-up call to knock on the door, find somebody who is engaged, interested in policy, wants to contribute, and then you say, you know, can you vote for so-and-so? Can you sign this petition? And they say, no, I can't. I'm a felon, and I have not had my rights restored. So actually, I do have a bill. I haven't dropped it yet this session. I did introduce it last session, and I will be again this year. To have voting rights automatically restored for felons. It is automatically restored for first-time persons who have had just one felony. But after a single felony, and if you know anything about our criminal justice system, it's very easy to rack up the felonies, you cannot, it is not automatically restored. You have to go to an attorney. You have to go through an entire process. And I don't think that's right.
We have a call from Charles. On the line, Charles?
Thank you. Your last point dovetails perfectly into what I want to ask. I'm certified by the state to teach a class in the use of force and self-defense, the legal aspects of it. And there's a test at the end. It's 50 questions. And if you flunk my test, it's really not a big deal. We can, you know, we can find the parts you don't know and teach them to you. But if you flunk the knowledge, you can end up being not qualified to vote as a felon. And life is so full of tests. I'm really, really, I have a second question after this one. I'm really, really concerned that if children, that third grader you were talking about who's having a hard time taking a test, instead of not giving them a test, why is the education system not teaching them how to take tests?
The test that is given, there are a lot of requirements for the teacher. The teacher has not seen the test to start with, so they can guess what will be on the test, but they also are not allowed to help students. So if a student has a question, the teacher is allowed to read the instructions again, but she's not allowed to help the student understand what they might not be understanding. And so
that wasn't my question.
Okay, can you ask your question again?
I apologize, I asked it inarticulately. Why is it that the educational system is not teaching children the skill set necessary to take all forms of tests? Why is that skill set not being taught? And I do have a follow-up. Go ahead.
I would just say that's not my understanding of what the status is, that the concern has been that there's too much teaching to these standardized tests. And certainly I've heard that from my own daughter when she was going to elementary school. And I've heard that from teachers, that there is a incentive to basically teach test-taking skills more than the critical thinking skills that we really want the kids to do. I mean, tests are a part of life.
Fair.
So I think, you know, some amount of that is not a problem, but too much emphasis on that, because these tests are just so important, you know, to the teacher too, that their students pass it, that they overemphasize that.
Okay, follow up real quick, because I know you probably have limited time. And that is, I have asked everyone who's either in office or running for office the same question, just like you have the same questions for all your people, all your guests. I've asked the same question for years. Rarely have I ever found an answer, have found people with the right answer, even those who are already serving an elective office like Ms. Engel. And the question, I wonder why we're not teaching this in Arizona at the elementary school level, so that not only the electeds know, but also everybody in the electorate knows what is the stated purpose of government according to Arizona's Constitution.
You mean like study the Arizona Constitution, study the Arizona Enabling Act, the thing that allowed us to become part of the United States?
No, that's not what I mean, but thank you for clarification. I was inarticulate again. I mean teaching what the stated purpose of government is according to its own constitution. I'm referring specifically to Article 2.
Maybe you can. I don't have the Constitution in front of me. I haven't memorized it. I have my own ideas of what government should do, but it sounds like you have a particular answer. Is this related to our discussion on education this morning?
It absolutely is.
Okay.
Because if people yes, and thank you for asking. Let me clarify. The reason it's related is because if people don't understand what their government is supposed to do, A, they can't very well serve in it, and B, the electorate can't really make an informed choice if they don't understand the stated purpose. I would give you some homework, if I may.
And if you can do it in 30 seconds, because our engineer is signaling me to, we have to go for break.
Yes.
I'll do it in 10.
Okay.
Article 2, Section 2. Teach it to everybody at the grade school level, and then our electeds will know the answer when some idiot asks them on the radio.
Thank you for calling, Charles. We're going to go for break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Smart Talk. We're here every Saturday. If you have any questions, call in at 520-790-2040. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk with Robin and Al. I'm Robin, and I'm your host today. And we are just wrapping up our conversation with Representative Kirsten Engel. And you have, there was something that was brought up at the meeting yesterday about some of the new bills having to do with sex ed. Do you want to address those?
Well, yes. You know, this has been an issue. You know, the Tucson School District has been revising their sex ed curriculum. We seem to be getting a backlash at the legislature on this right now. We have a system here in Arizona of an opt-in for sex education. I think we've been finding that, you know, comprehensive, medically accurate sex education is really the best way to prepare students and protect them from unwanted pregnancy in the future, from abusive relationships, is to make sure that they're getting scientifically accurate information in the schools. And nobody's talking about, explicit education or anything. But we seem to have, we have a bill by Sylvia Allen, who's a senator. She wants to eliminate any kind of sex education before seventh grade. And she also has, part of her bill is, I think she's got a restriction that you cannot use the word homosexuality in the sex education curriculum. So this seems to me to be really sort of hiding our head in the sand. Kids need some information about sexuality, age appropriate, but I think it's got to come before seventh grade. It does today in an opt-in way. I actually would support an opt-out choice instead, but also not teaching students about homosexuality, I think, is harmful to those students who are learning that they are homosexual at that age, and just not inclusive or accurate.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming in. And also, I neglected to say that you represent LD10, but this coming year, you will be moving to the...
Well, I'm running for the Arizona Senate from that district.
Great. Thank you. Well, thank you for coming in. We'll be right back. We're going to be speaking with Domingo DeGrazia, and we'll be back in just a second. Thanks. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk with Robin and Al. I'm your host, Robin. Today, we are continuing on our path to ask the candidates from LD10 the same questions so that we get the same, not the same responses, but responses to the same thing. But if you have any questions that we have not asked, please give us a call at 520-790-2040. Our next guest is Representative Domingo DeGrazia, and he is in the Arizona House, representing LD10, and I want to thank you for coming in because I know you have a busy Saturday. Oh, in addition, a pilot, a lawyer for juvenile court, you are the man of all worlds.
I've been really fortunate in my life. I've been able to do a lot of things and be successful at them. It's really been an honor, and yeah, I'm looking forward to still serving the people at the Capitol, getting back to work up there. It's a great part of the honors in my life that I've gotten to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have these questions, the questions we're asking everyone else. And so the first one is, how should Arizona schools be funded?
Arizona schools, well, specifically as I see it, Arizona public schools should be fully and properly funded. Now, coming from the legal world, I tend to follow the directives that are given to us by the Constitution. And when we look at specifically the Arizona Constitution, we are given a mandate that Arizona should have or has to have a public education system. Now, what that means, it in my mind, that doesn't mean that we have a public education system that is run down and broken. It means that we have to provide a good public education system that is open to everyone. So going from that starting point, then we ask the question of what does it need to look like? How well do we educate our students? What should the facilities look like? What should the teachers be paid? Mm-hmm. So getting to the how should Arizona's schools be funded, it has to be a permanent source. You can't have ups and downs. It has to be a permanent source so we have predictability. We have to have a bar that we set that says that students and teachers will have access to this certain equipment, a certain type of school that has certain maintenance guidelines, and we've been failing at that. When you hear folks say that Arizona has a budget surplus, that is incorrect.
What would be considered a permanent source?
So we have a few sources of revenue in Arizona, and when you look at either sales tax or property tax, sales tax is a little bit more volatile. Property tax is always more stable. So that's the one that we would look to first. And when you make that calculation of the source of income, we first look at the total amount of assets or income that are available to us. And one interesting piece of Arizona's budget is that we have tax giveaways, credits that we can't look at. Once they go into effect, we can't go back and analyze whether those tax incentives are doing any good for us. They are put in place and they go on forever. So we need to look at how much money we're giving away to businesses.
So that was actually our next question, which is that we have approximately $13 billion in tax credits every year.
Right.
And our entire state budget is only $11 billion, which is less than what we're giving away.
Yeah.
So how would you address that?
Well, the entire state budget is actually, I think, closer to 40 or 50 million. Now, the amount that we have that's discretionary is around 11 million. So, we need to look at that 13, I guess it's 13 billion, and ask whether the money that we have in tax credits that we're giving away is deriving a benefit for us. We have to be responsible about our use of money and say, is this giving us a benefit, or are we, you know, being taken for a ride by a company? There are certain ways that we can incentivize companies to come to Arizona. Arizona is a great place to be. We've got a lot of really, really valuable aspects to us, be it climate, geography, geology, transit routes. We have some really amazing features that a lot of companies will want, but we don't have to give them away for free, and we don't have to give them away for free forever. So we need the ability to look at these tax credits and ask that fundamental question, is this giving us a benefit? So that is a potential source of revenue. As I said, a permanent funding source for public education is the goal. How we get there is always a discussion. The appropriations talks are amazingly complicated, and they go on for days and days and days. So that's something I will be definitely looking at this session, making sure that we drive toward that goal of fully and properly funding public education.
Thank you. We have a call from Sue, who has a question. Sue? Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Hi, Mr. DeGrazia, we have been in front of you in the state legislature on the Judiciary Committee, and we want to thank you for standing up for constitutional rights of the citizens. I just heard Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution is that, you know, all the political power is inherent in the people, and I want to thank you for protecting that. Do you have a difficult time in the legislature upholding the Constitution in the bills in the thousands of bills that run across your desk?
Hi, Sue. Thanks for calling in. And the answer is yes, I have an incredibly difficult time. Coming from a legal background, I take constitutionality and legality as an incredibly important piece of what we do, and not the least of which is because if we get things wrong, the state gets sued, and it's taxpayer money that is at issue. One of the things I run into a lot of times with bills that are unconstitutional, The majority tends to pass bills that they like, whether they're constitutional or not. And that is a huge problem that I see. Now, what you're referring to, Article 2, Section 2 of the Arizona Constitution, does say that the inherent power of the state is reserved to the people. And one way that I've taken issue with it bothers me to no end is something called a non-germane striker. So imagine that a bill goes through the Arizona legislature and it's on some non-controversial issue. It goes through the House, through the Senate, gets approved, gets to the very last days in one of the two chambers, and then someone will introduce a bill that takes out the entirety of the language of the bill and inserts entirely new language. The problem that we see is that if it's on the last few days of session, the public doesn't have the opportunity to chime in and opine about whether we should have that bill. I believe that runs contrary to the way that we should be doing things as far as giving the public notice and opportunity to come in and speak through the request to speak system. So yeah, there are a lot of issues. I'd like to make sure that we uphold that Article 2, Section 2 to the fullest.
We have another call from Mr. Stu.
Okay.
Hi.
Good morning. Thank you all for your efforts. I think until we deal with two things, financing education just isn't going to work. One, most of the land in the state is under the control of the federal government and cannot be taxed for local purposes. We need to deal with that. We need to deal with that for a long time. The other thing is the Department of Education is useless, except for it sucks a lot of money out of the system and tells people which bathrooms they get to use. We need to deal with both those things, lose the Department of Education, and get our land back so we can have a tax base. Have a lovely day. Thank you for your efforts.
Thank you for calling in. So our next question is, so tests are considered high stakes.
Robin, before you go to that, can I go back to something that Representative DeGrazia said about the request to speak system? I attended the ALEC panel that you were part of a few weeks ago, and you mentioned that someone said, how helpful is it really to be using the request to speak system? And you said that when you look at that list of people and you see that people in your district are commenting and are working as hard on these things as you yourself are working in some cases. And I wanted you to talk a little about request to speak and how we as constituents can let our representatives know how we feel.
Absolutely. So as a citizen of Arizona, you can get onto the Arizona Legislature website and look at the bills that are being assigned to committees. And there is an opportunity to sign up for, usually it's locally you sign up for request to speak, but you can leave either a comment, a thumbs up, thumbs down, or you can ask to actually be present at the Capitol and speak on a bill. The request to speak, we shorthand it, is RTS. I look at that as bills come up. I look at it to see who's for, who's against, what kind of comments they have, because I'm, as a representative, I represent all the folks in my district, and I don't take the position that I'm just going to do what I want for them. I take the position that I'm representing all of us, and we should have a group discussion about what bills are coming up and what's best for our community. So I look at RTS as a way to see what people are thinking and what folks are thinking. And it's incredibly heartening to see a lot of folks chime in on RTS, because at the Capitol, the way that I do the job as a legislator is I tend to work 10, 12-hour days. It's high-paced, it's incredibly busy, it's incredibly stressful, and to have folks from the Tucson community leave their thoughts, it's a great way for me to know that we're all in this together and that I'm not up there alone just, you know, grinding through what oftentimes is kind of a terrible system. It's a really, really fascinatingly bad way to run a government. But yeah, the RTS is great. I encourage everyone to look at bills and chime in with your thoughts. They don't have to be technical. It could just be what you believe, but let us know, please.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is about a program called Move On When Reading. And so tests are considered high stakes when a single standardized test has a major impact, usually negative, on a child's schooling. Arizona has a school program called Move On When Reading. This uses a high stakes test given on a single day that determines whether a child will go into fourth grade or be held back and kept in third grade. While we might think that this will benefit our students, research says it does just the opposite. High school dropout rates actually increase when a child has been retained. So do you support the third grade high stakes test in reading?
No, I don't. I generally don't support any kind of singular testing that will determine an outcome, especially for something as important as staying in a grade level or moving on. I look at an aggregation of skills over time, and you're going to have ebbs and flows, kind of valleys and peaks as far as individual performance. And I don't think that a singular test is the way to make that determination. I do believe that teachers should have more discretion to really give the evaluation of how students are doing, because they're with our students all day for months and months, and they can give a better evaluation of what the performance of the students will be and what it's looking like in the future.
Thank you. So actually, a way to improve children's reading skills is to reduce class size in K-3. So our last question is, what are your priorities for this coming session?
Oh, I've got a lot of priorities. So now that I...
Your top three.
My top three priorities.
You can go for more, but...
Yeah, so understanding that we have a lot of priorities that we're going for. Public education, fully funding it, as I said. Healthcare, the environment. For me, foster care, DCS. All of these things are big priorities. But one that I'm specifically focused on, because of my legal background and because of my background in technology, I have data privacy bills that are coming forth. And the way that this would probably impact education is when we look at schools, public schools, and I suppose some private schools that are being hit by ransomware. That is a huge issue that we need to be front and center on. Now, schools have mandates from the federal government about keeping education or keeping student data safe. And this is the federal...
FERPA.
Yeah, FERPA. Federal Education Rights and Privacy Act. And there was a follow-up to that. But on the state level, we need to make sure that we have two different layers of security. There's physical security for the servers or the documents that have our students' information. But we also need to make sure that our folks are trained up. The school districts have their own people trained up to make sure they're not being phished. And by fish, it's not F-I-S-H. It's P-H-I-S-H, meaning getting information from folks, credentials that are then used to log into systems or breach a system. We've already seen this happening to a lot of government systems and schools across the country where ransomware is locking up systems. Essentially, you have to pay in cryptocurrency to get the data back or to get access to the data. A lot of our school districts don't have the money for that. So in the two-pronged concern, one is student data being out in the open, mm-hmm. or two, the school districts just not having access to that data. It's a giant concern. And I've talked to some of our officials at the state within the context of a broader data privacy and cybersecurity legislation I'll be dropping that will be a component of it.
Okay, great. We have a call from Ingrid. We only have a few minutes. Hi, Ingrid.
Hi. A couple of times you talked about student achievement and being held back a whole year for some issue. So I don't understand why the school systems, all of them across the country, don't have separate subjects taught by separate teachers, like math by one teacher, some science subject by another. And if the student is doing poorly in one subject, he can be held back in that subject and maybe even get help in the summertime to catch up. Why has this not been taken care of already? I've made a presentation many years ago right here in Tucson about that very thing, and no one is thinking about this.
Well, that's an interesting idea. I think traditionally, especially in elementary schools, we have tended to go with one teacher for all the subjects. I have not seen any research on the proposal. Is it done anywhere in the country or in the world this way? Okay. Thank you, Ingrid, for calling. And okay, continue with your priorities.
Yeah, so the other priorities.
Oh, we're talking to Representative Domingo DeGrassi.
Thanks. So within the context of data privacy and cybersecurity, I'm also looking at things like biometric scanning and the right to know who's collecting our information, where it's being sold, whether it's being sold, how it's being transferred, and the right to ask that this information be deleted. This is not a new idea. It's been something that's come up through Europe since the Second World War, when they recognized how critical it is to not have certain information sets about people, be it race, gender, ethnicity, nationality, those type of things, not have that be aggregated and used in a negative way. So Europe has data protection laws. California just passed a data protection law. So I'm bringing it to Arizona. Now, with that, the other things that we're always pushing for, like I said, fully funding public education. I've got some bills on voter rights. I've got some bills that I'm working with folks on criminal justice reform. I would love to see some work in environmental protections, specifically moving toward capturing solar energy and reusing it as a renewable resource.
How are we doing in Arizona on that?
on renewables or mm-hmm. on solar. Arizona is a really fascinating place. If you look at the amount of, I'm going to nerd out for a second here. If you look at the amount of solar ejecta and the amount of photonic energy that's striking Arizona at any given moment during the day, we have a tremendous amount of free energy that we are just not capturing. We're letting it fall on our rooftops and heat things up, and we're just not using it. We could do a lot better in terms of incentivizing and allowing our citizens to capture their own energy and take some of the load off of the grid so that we don't rely on the traditional energy sources. There's a lot of ways that we could improve. We're doing not so well to okay, but we could do a lot better.
I was always surprised to find out that Germany had more solar energy than Arizona, because it's a really cloudy, rainy, cold country.
It is, yeah. As the technology comes along, as far as the solar panels, we can certainly do more. And in the interesting thing about the United States and Arizonans, we have this kind of embedded idea that we do for ourselves. We do what we can to take care of ourselves, and we provide for our own. But when it comes to capturing our own electrical energy, we have a lot of laws and regulations that are actually contrary to that, because everybody that has a home, we all have solar energy falling on our rooftops, but we don't have good ways to capture that and use it in our homes. I'm lucky that I have a big solar system and an electric vehicle so that I can be as close to off the grid as possible. But yeah, we could certainly do better. If you imagine the analogy, if you imagine someone invented a device that would pick water out of the air so that we could just have our own clean, fresh water. Everybody would say, yeah, that's great. That's a fantastic idea. It should be in every home. But then you flip that analogy over to solar. Why does everyone not have the ability to generate their own solar? So,
we have a caller, Patricia. We're actually kind of winding down. But Patricia, thank you for calling in.
Hi.
Hi.
Representative DeGrazia, I presented in front of you and in front of the committee for SB 1064 last year. Thank you for your support on that. I'm wondering about how we can uphold the fundamental liberty interest for parents. The courts are going around the legislative intent of statute, and how can we get parents not to be prosecuted for being parents in Arizona? This is the worst state where parents are being arrested. Children are being murdered. We have the highest rate of murder suicides. We have 88 murder suicides January to October, and 8 of those were children. The courts are pushing false theories instead of following the law. Is there a way to opt out of having to use a court system that is so in crisis?
And thanks for calling in. Can you remind me what SB 1064 is while I look it up here?
It's police in the court, so the judges now have security guards that can tase and shoot you based on the judicial direction to tase or shoot a litigant.
Right. Yeah, that was actually a big issue, and the fundamental question that was coming up with that piece of legislation was whether courts and judges should have their own, essentially their own police force. And this kind of runs contrary to a lot of ideas. Like, we have a police force that is separate from a judiciary. The judiciary should not be directing the police force. These are separate entities, and we have separations of powers for that reason. So, there was some overlap. We did as much as we could to fight these things. And if these bills come up again, we're going to be fighting them again. I think what our caller is getting to is parental rights in court cases, that probably specifically toward parental rights cases, and there is a lot of work that has to be done in that area. I do have that specialization. I was in juvenile courts for a long time, so I've worked with kids and families, and I have a good idea of what the needs are.
Thank you for calling in. Is there any other priorities you have? Or Janice, do you have a question?
No.
Okay. Any other priorities you want to address?
Let's
ERC.
Yeah, so the earned release credits. I was on the over the summer. I was part of the earned release credits committee, the ERC committee, and we were looking at everything that has to do with criminal justice system, specifically with a better mechanism by which folks that have been incarcerated can show a demonstrated change and earn a release earlier than what they were sentenced to. And we do have some bills coming up on that that are going to touch on a handful of topics that surround that. We need to make better reforms of the entirety of the prison system, but I will be signing on to an ERC bill that's coming up, should be dropped in the next few days. And then the task is, if these bills get assigned to committee, making sure that the committee chairs actually set a hearing. There is a giant problem where really good bills do not get assigned for hearing by the committee chairs, so the public will not have the opportunity to chime in on those, and the idea essentially dies. So a lot of steps in the process, a lot of layers in the process, but I'll be up there working hard and getting back in the swing of it by Monday.
So I have a quick last question for you. When Superintendent Kathy Hoffman was on our show, she pointed out that across the state, there are only 150 high school physics teachers. And we have 200 districts in the state, many of them with multiple schools. And so we're desperately in need of high school math and science teachers. What can the legislature do to help districts recruit and retain teachers?
Well, first of all, we could give our teachers the pay and the recognition for the job that they do, and then incentivize other teachers to come in. We're doing a pretty terrible job of retaining teachers, and it terrifies me every time I'm talking to a constituent, knocking on doors, and I find a teacher that says, hey, I'm thinking about going to a different state because the pay is so bad, or that they have an extra job or two extra jobs. So we need to first of all, just take care of our teachers. And like I said, give them the respect and the pay that they deserve. I believe by doing that, we will change the dynamics of our teaching and make other teachers or help other teachers want to come in. We do need to put a bigger emphasis on science and technology. That's part of my background. I believe in science. I believe in having theories that you can test and peer review, because we all get better data that way. So physics... That's one that's on the top of the list. I would like to have more tech companies come to Arizona, but we have to have folks that are trained up in those tech areas.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for coming in. And thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And Janice Porter and Representative Kirsten Engel and Representative Domingo de Grazia, they are part of our LD10 exploration. And thank you for representing us up at the legislature.
Oh, happy to be there, and it's an honor, and thanks for talking to me this morning.
Okay.
Nope. I thank you for giving us the heads up on the privacy issues. I'll be watching those this session.
Yes, this was a big deal a few years ago when Bill Gates and Rupert Murdoch got together to develop a way that they could offer states free, they would collect the data. They would own the data, but they would give the state whatever they wanted, and they would collect it from all school children. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week. Al will be your host. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.